Our Father in Heaven, we are deeply thankful for times like this, that we can come together into your very presence, your children, and we ask that you will help us, that we know what it means to draw near to you, that we may grow in appreciation of who you really are. Father, we know that you deeply care for each one of us, and we ask that you will help us, that we may learn to appreciate your hand upon our lives, and yet also help us to recognize how we should respond to you and order our lives, that we can be truly confident of you and your undertaking for every aspect of our lives. Father, we recognize that you are a God of moral goodness and perfection, and we know that you will not be indifferent to how we live our lives. We ask that you help us, that even as we appreciate your grace, your love, your goodness, we may also appreciate and recognize your holiness. Father, we thank you that you have been gracious to us. Thank you for watching over our lives. We ask that you help us, that we may also learn to appreciate the many situations and contexts you have placed us in and allow us to go through, and things you desire to teach us. Help us to be able to see things from your perspective, in accordance with the truth. We may be able to know how to cooperate with you and to respond well to each situation we are in. We thank you for this time. We ask that as we look at the scriptures, as we reflect upon what David went through, that you help us to ponder over what we can learn from these experiences and the implications for our own lives. We thank you again for this time. We ask that you be pleased to be in our midst, to speak to us. We ask that you will protect us and keep us from the evil one. That you will not allow the powers of darkness in any way to harass us, to disturb us, in any way to hinder us from hearing, from understanding, from hearkening to what you have to speak to us. For we ask and pray all this in Jesus' precious name. Amen. We continue with our consideration of the subject of appearance and reality, the 54th message, the second major category of situations, the 30th message, and the topic for today, the security and well-being of David. The security and well-being of David, the fleeing fugitive. How we view life and situations of life, in particular the situations that we go through and the context that we are in, is a very important matter and one that is helpful for us to ponder over. And it's helpful for us also to recognize that there are different ways of viewing the same set of circumstances. Different ways of viewing the same set of circumstances, and how we do so can significantly affect our posture, our morale, as well as how well we can cope with the situation or the context that we are in, and how well we can go to them. But most importantly, we need to take note of the importance whether we are viewing the situations, the context, in line with reality. That is the true perspective, how God looks at it. There's no point pretending the situation is otherwise, hoping that in that way it can help us to cope better with it. That should not be the approach adopted by Christian. We have to face the truth and the reality. These are the main issues we'll be concentrating on for today, as we consider the scriptural record of what David went through as he was relentlessly pursued by King Saul, who wanted to kill him. And as we ponder about the scriptural record of what David went through, you realize that there's a tendency for men to view such situations from the outward appearance of things. And likely, when we read through records like this, or we see the lives of people who go through such times, tendency would be to see the two of them, David and King Saul, that they are so unequal, and so unequal in King Saul's favor. The King Saul at that time was a powerful king with an army, and he was in hot pursuit of a rather helpless and pathetic David, who was fleeing from place to place and also having to spend much time in the wilderness, in the midst of constant danger, insecurity, and suffering much hardship. Or as David himself puts it, that the king of Israel was pursuing after a dead dog, a single flea. This is what he mentioned in 1 Samuel chapter 24, verse 14. And we'll now trace what David went through from this perspective. This perspective is according to our appearance of things and the way that people would tend to view such contexts, such experiences that David went through. Let us turn to 1 Samuel chapter 18. From verse 5 to 11, we see here that David was faring well. Verse 5 says that he went out wherever Saul sent him. He was serving King Saul at that time, and he prospered, and Saul set him over the men of war. King Saul also recognized David's capabilities, and it was pleasing the sight of all the people and also in the sight of Saul's servants. David was performing well. And it happened as they were coming, when David returned from killing the Philistine, that the women came out of all the cities of Israel, singing and dancing, to meet King Saul, with tambourines, with joy, and with musical instruments. And the women sang as they played, and said, "Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s. I read this passage so that we see the context that David was faring well. It's through no fault of his own. The setting of the beginning of David's problems with regards to King Saul trying to kill him. Verse 8, "Then Saul became very angry, for this saying displeased him, not because of anything wrong that David had done, but because the women were singing these phrases of David, and because of his performance. Saul became very angry, displeased, and he said, 'They have ascribed to David 10,000s, but to me they have ascribed thousands. Now what more can he have for the kingdom?' And Saul looked at David with suspicion from that day on." From that day on, Saul tried persistently to kill David. So it's helpful to notice here that it was through no fault on David's part that King Saul was angry with him, suspicious of him, wanted to destroy him, to kill him. So verse 11, we see King Saul hurled the spear, for he thought, "I will pin David to the wall." But David escaped from his presence twice. This was the beginning of it. King Saul pursuing after David to kill him. He hurled the spear at David. Surely this was a rather dangerous kind of experience, and he escaped twice. And then we look on to chapter 19, verse 10. Again, King Saul tried to spear David. He tried to pin David to the wall with a spear, but again, David escaped, and he had to flee. slip away out of Saul's presence, and Saul stuck the spear into the wall, missed David, and David fled and escaped that night. So David was fleeing, and we find that King Saul was not satisfied that David had fled, but he sent messengers to David's house to put him to death. Verse 11. Then Saul sent messengers to David's house to watch him in order to put him to death in the morning. He was not safe even in his own house. Saul sent messengers after him, and it was Michelle, his wife, who helped him to escape. So he had to flee again. Verse 12. Michelle let David down to a window, and he went out and fled and escaped. And as we read on, we'll find that again and again David had to flee. He fled many times with Saul in hot pursuit of him. And this time we find in verse 18, David fled to Samuel. Now David fled and escaped and came to Samuel at Ramah and told him all that Saul had done to him. And he and Samuel went and stayed in Naioth. Now we may have thought that David would now be saved because of his Saul, and surely King Saul, or rather David now staying with Samuel, and King Saul would have respect for Samuel and not seek to kill David there in the presence or while he's staying with Samuel. But it was not so. When this was told King Saul in verse 19, we find King Saul sent messengers to take David, verse 20. So Saul continued to persist in the pursuit of David. And we find that in spite of God's intervention in this situation, because the messengers sent by Saul, they began to prophesy and they were not able to continue on in their mission. We find that Saul continued to persist in that direction. He was very persistent. Even just in these few verses, we find that when Saul was told that the first batch of messengers failed, he sent another batch. Verse 21, and when he was told Saul, he sent other messengers, and they also prophesied. They were also hindered from carrying out that mission. And Saul sent again the third time, sent messengers again the third time. But again they prophesied and were not able to carry out what he had instructed them. So three batches of messengers were sent to take hold of David. And when even the third batch failed, King Saul persisted and went himself. And he himself also went to Ramah, but he also failed. So we see there are so many attempts on the part of King Saul to pursue after David, to arrest him, to kill him. And verse chapter 20 verse 1, we see David now fleeing to Jonathan. David fled and came and said to Jonathan. So he fled to Jonathan, who was actually the son of his enemy, King Saul. That wasn't the end of the story of David having to flee. Chapter 21, we find that he had to flee to Nob. Because even though Jonathan tried to help him and spoke to King Saul on David's behalf, he actually incurred Saul's anger. I will not go through the details of this. You can read for yourself. For example, chapter 20 verse 30, how King Saul became very angry with Jonathan. So David had to flee again. Chapter 21, he fled to Nob. And then in verse 10, we find that he had to flee again and went to Achish, king of Gath, of the land of the Philistines. Finally, he had to flee and to the land of the Philistines. And even in the land of Philistines, we find that David again had to go through a difficult time because of the words of the servants of Achish. Verse 11, chapter 21, the servants of Achish said to him, "Is this not David, the king of the land? Did they not sing of this one as they danced, saying, 'Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s? And David took these words to heart and greatly feared Achish, king of Gath. He was concerned that David, the king, might kill him. And as a result, you find that he had to feign insanity, that he was mad. Verse 13. So he disguised his sanity before them and acted insanely in their hands and scribbled on the doors of the gate and let his saliva run down into his beard." Beard. He had to go through such a difficult time. Seems such a miserable kind of way to live his life, fleeing and even now having to act in this way as if he's a madman. And as a result, he was able to escape. He was not killed, and so we find that he escaped. And again in chapter 22, verse 1, David departed from there and escaped to the cave of Adullam. So now he fled to a cave and he stayed there. And then chapter 23, verse 5, tells us how he delivered Keilah from the Philistines. Chapter 23, verse 5. Because the Philistines were fighting against Keilah, in verse 1, and David went to deliver the inhabitants of Keilah. But although he delivered Keilah from the Philistines, we find verse 8, Saul summoned all the people for war to go down to Keilah to besiege David and his men. And in this context, David sought the Lord, and he was told that the men of Keilah will surrender him to Saul. Verse 12. Then David said, "Will the men of Keilah surrender me and my men to the hand of Saul?" And the Lord said, "They will surrender you." This must be rather discouraging, or this can be viewed as rather discouraging for a person going through in the shoes of David. Here he had delivered the men of Keilah from the Philistines, and now they will surrender him to Saul. Those he delivered will surrender him to his enemy. And so David again had to flee. And verse 13 tells us how he departed from Keilah, and verse 14 tells us he now stayed in the wilderness. But even in the wilderness, Saul continued to pursue him, the second part of verse 14. And Saul sought him every day. Saul sought him every day in the wilderness. So David's life is very precarious, difficult, unpleasant, fleeing from place to place, and finally even the wilderness. And even there, King Saul was pursuing him every day. And in verse 25, we find again Saul and his men going after David when he was given information where David was. And this time we see him pursuing David in the wilderness of Maon. And in this context, I'm referring to these few verses here to see the kind of life that David had to go through. Verse 26, a very precarious situation. Saul actually surrounding David. Verse 26, and Saul went on one side of the mountain, and David and his men were on the other side of the mountain. And David was hurrying to get away from Saul, for Saul and his men were surrounding David and his men to seize him. And David and his men were being surrounded. And it was only an event that took place. The news that came, verse 27 onwards, which resulted in Saul hurrying away because the Philistines had made a raid on the land. It was a very precarious situation that David was in. This was not the end. Chapter 24, verses 1 and 2, Saul continued to pursue after David, this time in the wilderness of Engedi. and he was told that David was in the wilderness of Engedi. Saul took 3,000 chosen men from all Israel and went to seek David and his men in front of the rocks of the wild goats. He still refused to give up. King Saul refused to give up pursuing after David. And verse 3, we find that David and his men were in the cave, and Saul went into the cave. Again, a very precarious situation. David could have been caught in that situation. One sense can say it could be that very difficult for David to escape because they were in the cave. Verse 3, and he came to the sheepfolds on the way where there was a cave, and Saul went in to relieve himself. Now David and his men were sitting in the inner recesses of the cave. But on this occasion, again, he was not caught. And chapter 26, verse 1 and 2, Saul pursuing David in the wilderness of Ziph. The Zivites came to Saul at Gibeah, saying, is not David hiding the hill of Hakilah, which is before Jeshimon? And this took place after David had very graciously allowed Saul to depart in peace, when Saul actually was in his hands and he could have killed him. We'll look at this more afterwards. But in spite of Saul knowing that King David had, or rather now at this point of time, he's not yet crowned king, that David had graciously allowed him to depart in peace, he still pursued after David. So when he was told that David was hiding in the hill of Hakilah, Saul arose and went down to the wilderness of Ziph, having with him 3,000 chosen men of Israel to search for David in the wilderness of Ziph. And finally, chapter 27, verse 1, we find that David actually had to escape into the land of the Philistines and live with Achish of Gath. Chapter 27, verse 1. David said to himself, now I will perish one day by the hand of Saul. David felt that in all this pursuit of him by King Saul, one day he will fall into the hands of King Saul. And so he said, it's nothing better for me than to escape into the land of the Philistines. Then Saul then will despair of searching for me anymore in all the territory of Israel, and will escape from his hand. So David arose and crossed over, he and the 600 men were with him, to Achish, the son of Maon, king of Gath. And so David lived with Achish at Gath. As we look at the life of King David during this period of his life, it appears to be one that's rather insecure. A person going through such context can easily feel rather miserable, very difficult, a lot of hardships, fleeing from place to place, and being pursued with such great determination by the king of Israel. His life constantly in danger, so many narrow escapes. And all this, not through any fault of his, but the problem lies with King Saul. So people who go through such times will tend to feel, as well as to view such times in this way, according to the outward appearance of things. But is this the true picture? Was it really like that? What was the reality? Who was the one who was really insecure? The one who was truly pathetic and in a miserable state? What is the true perspective? What is the reality? In reality, it's quite clear that King Saul was the one who felt threatened, the one who was really insecure, the one who was really in a pathetic and miserable state. The Spirit of the Lord had departed from King Saul, and he was being terrorized by an evil spirit. 1 Samuel 16, chapter 16, verse 14. Now the Spirit of the Lord departed from Saul, and an evil spirit from the Lord terrorized him. So the Spirit of the Lord had departed from Saul, and he was being terrorized by an evil spirit. And he was suspicious of David. He felt threatened by David and his popularity. And also, it's important to note that God had already pronounced that the kingdom would be taken away from Saul and given to David. The pronouncement had already been made in no uncertain terms, no ambiguity about it. 1 Samuel chapter 13, verses 13 and 14. Samuel spoke to Saul. Samuel said to Saul, verse 13, "You have acted foolishly. You have not kept the commandment of the Lord your God, which he commanded you. For now the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever, but now your kingdom shall not endure." If King Saul had been obedient, his kingdom could have continued. But because of his disobedience to the Lord, his kingdom will not endure. Verse 14 carries on. "The Lord has sought out for himself a man after his own heart. And the Lord has appointed him as ruler over his people, because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you." And you see afterwards that the man after God's own heart is none other than David himself. So God had already made a pronouncement through Samuel. And we see words to like effect in chapter 15, verses 23 and 28. Chapter 15, verse 23. Another context of disobedience on the part of King Saul. Verse 23, Samuel spoke to Saul and he said, "For rebellion is as the sin of divination," referring to Saul's disobedience to God, "and insubordination is as iniquity and idolatry. Because you have rejected the word of the Lord," failed to obey God, "he has also rejected you from being king." God has rejected Saul from being king. Verse 28. Verse 27 tells us how when Samuel was turning to go away, Saul seized the edge of his robe and he tore. In that context, Samuel said to him, "The Lord has torn the kingdom of Israel from you today and has given it to your neighbor who is better than you." A neighbor who is better than you. It's revealed to us in the next chapter. Chapter 16, verse 1. The one whom God has chosen to be king over Israel. Chapter 16, verse 1. "Now the Lord said to Samuel, 'How long will you grieve over Saul, since I have rejected him from being king over Israel? Fill your horn with oil and go. I will send you to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I have selected a king for myself among his sons.'" God has selected a king for the nation of Israel, and he asked Samuel to anoint him king. Verse 3, the second part, he is instructed how he should anoint for the Lord the one whom God designated to him. We will not read through the whole passage, but just come straight to the point. In verses 12 and 13, we see David here being anointed by Saul, chosen by the Lord to be king over Israel. Verse 12, "So he sent and brought him in." This is a reference to the youngest of Jesse's son. "And he was ruddy with beautiful eyes and handsome appearance. And the Lord said, 'Arise, anoint him, for this is he.' Then Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the midst of his brothers. And the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon David from that day forward." David anointed by Samuel, specifically chosen by the Lord to be king over Israel. And this is the crucial aspect to take note of. In no uncertain terms, God had pronounced that the kingdom would be taken away from Saul and given to David. And this is what counts. If God has decided, it will be so. So how does God look at the situation? How did God look at the situation? in the eyes of the Lord, King Saul was in a bad state. You can say he was an ugly person at that point of time, and became increasingly worse. In the past, we've traced how King Saul went from bad to worse, and he was under spiritual bondage. And it's quite clear that by his fleshly attempts, he would not be able to keep the kingdom or to kill David, because the Lord's will was that the kingdom should go to David, and the Lord would undertake for David's life. So we can say that outwardly, King Saul may still be wearing the crown and trying very hard to cling to the throne, but in the eyes of the Lord, the decision was already made. The kingdom was to pass to David. Though David at that point of time may be fleeing for his life, the fleeing fugitive, fleeing from place to place, but in the eyes of the Lord, it was already settled. He will be king over the nation of Israel. So if we look at the total picture, including the spiritual aspects, then you'll see that with God's sovereign undertaking, David was secure in the Lord. Of course, if David did foolish things, he cannot presume that he will still be alright. He cannot be presumptuous. But David was secure in the Lord. With God's sovereign undertaking, David was secure in the Lord. And the records in the scriptures shows that at this period, during this period, the Lord's favor and blessings were upon him. If you look at 1 Samuel chapter 18, verse 14. And this was just before David, in the context of the beginning of David fleeing from Saul, the context of the beginning where King Saul wanted to kill him. Verse 14, 1 Samuel 18. He says, "And David was prospering in all his ways, for the Lord was with him." The Lord's favor and blessings were upon David, and he was prospering in all his ways. And this is indeed true security and blessedness. Not just outward aspects of things, but if the Lord's hand is upon you, if the Lord's eyes are upon you, the Lord is with you in a favorable sense, then there is true security and blessedness. So then, as we reflect on what David went through, a very helpful point for us to take note of and ponder about is that how we view the situations we go through and the context that we are in is very important. And a person in David's shoes or going through situations like that may not be exactly the same as David's, but in situations like these, we may do so in two different ways. Of course, there are variations to this, but basically I want to highlight two different ways of going through situations like that. The first way of going through it, and sad to say, many people, including believers, tend to go through such situations in this way. The first way would be to feel discouraged, and easily a sense of self-pity would come in. There's such a terrible and miserable life, having to flee and flee and flee, and one problem, one trouble after another seem to keep coming in endless succession. It's such a hard life. It's so dangerous, so insecure. And especially in spite of good attitudes, efforts to work out, to work at it, and even refusal to retaliate, to hit back at those who are making life difficult for us. Often believers, even believers, tend to feel in this way, and at times also feel that God doesn't seem to care. Why does God allow me to go through such hard times? And the thoughts may come to our minds that those who want to be faithful to God, those who want to conduct themselves properly, seems to be at a disadvantage, often harassed, and have to face all kinds of problems. Including at the hands of the ungodly, or those who are disobedient to God. Or we can go through such times in another way, the second way. And that is, a person going through times like what David went through. We know what it means to love God, to trust Him. We can actually be deeply thankful during such times that the sovereign, almighty and perfect God exists. Just deeply thankful that God exists. And not only that, that He is our Heavenly Father. It's a very wonderful thing that during such times we can ponder over and be deeply convicted over these truths and its implications for our lives during those times. Deeply thankful that the sovereign, almighty and perfect God exists, and only then that He is our Heavenly Father, and that He cares for us, and that He undertakes for our lives. That as we trust Him, walk with Him, obedient to Him, we can go through such times with a very deep sense of peace and assurance of security in the Lord and of well-being in Him. That is, in the true sense of it, from an eternal perspective. Assurance of security in God doesn't mean that we will not suffer pain or even injuries, be hurt by others. But a deep sense of assurance of security that no one and no circumstance can really harm us in the eternal sense, from the eternal perspective. And even physical injuries, physical harm, it will not take place without God's permission. If God doesn't permit it, it will not happen. Then the kind of sense of assurance of security that we can properly have in God. We learn to trust Him, to walk with Him, and a deep sense of well-being in Him. Although there may be physical hardships, material deprivation, or materially we may not be well off, we know that there will be true well-being in the Lord as we seek to be faithful to Him. Not that we'll be perfect, but basically, if our heart's attitudes are right, the direction is set, and basically, we are walking with Him, faithful to Him, we can trust Him to undertake. And that's why the topic for today's message is the security and well-being of David, the fleeing fugitive. It doesn't seem to go together, the fleeing fugitive and yet security and well-being. But the security and well-being of David in this sense, the true sense, ultimate reality. The security, the well-being of David, although he is the fleeing fugitive. And this second way of going through such times includes and helpful for us to ponder over how David should go through such times and how we ourselves should go through it as opportunities to see and to experience God's sovereign undertaking. See that there are various occasions for David actually to witness, to experience for himself, not just in his mind to recognize that God is sovereign, but actually to experience God's sovereign undertaking, to see God at work in the many different situations that may seem so dangerous. And such experiences are very helpful to teach us, to help us to really know God and to learn to grow in our faith in Him. Times where we can learn to pray and to see answers to prayer, to see how God undertakes. There are many precious, these are actually very precious times in our walk with God. And that's the way we should view it. And this is actually God's will and God's intention in allowing us to go through such times. And so this is how we will now trace again what David went through from this perspective. And if you go through life with this perspective, we go through now again what David went through from this perspective, you'll find that the picture becomes very different from the first picture. To see God clearly undertaking His hand on David's life. God was with him, with David, whom he had chosen as king over Israel. Now we look through again, trace back again what David went through from this perspective, which is the perspective that we should learn to adopt as we go through life and the difficulties of life. So 1 Samuel chapter 18, we see in the context of David faring well, Saul becoming angry, suspicious of him, and trying to spear him and to kill him. And as mentioned just now, that from an outward appearance kind of approach, the tendency will be to feel rather insecure, dangerous, and so on. But even in this context, we can see the true perspective. What is the true perspective here? The reality. Verse 12. Saul was the one who was afraid. Verse 12. Saul was afraid of David. And actually, it is that way. David need not be fearful of Saul because God's hand was upon him. So long as he walked with God, he need not be fearful in a negative sense. Yes, he need to be careful that Saul was trying to kill him. But Saul was afraid of David in a negative sense. Saul was afraid of David. Verse 12. Why? For the Lord was with him and had departed from Saul. So Saul was the one who feels threatened, fearful in an unhealthy sense. The reason? The Lord was with David. And that is the crucial point. The Lord was with David but had departed from Saul. This helps us to see the true perspective, the reality of what was taking place. And verse 10 tells us that Saul was under spiritual attack. Verse 10. And it came about on the next day that an evil spirit from God came mightily upon Saul, and he raved in the midst of the house while David was playing the harp with his hand as usual, and a spear was in Saul's hand. Yes, Saul was also responsible for the way he conducted himself and when he tried to spear David, but it's also in the context of the evil spirit attacking him. Saul was indeed not in a pleasant kind of context. It's a very difficult, trying, and miserable context to be terrorized in this way by evil spirits. In a sense that is not meaningful at all. And then as we go on, we find that we see various contexts, various incidents where Saul again and again he tried to kill David but he wasn't able to. These are actually various occasions where it's quite clear the Lord was undertaking experiences on the part of David, experiencing God in real life situations, undertaking for him. Even as he had come to recognize the sovereignty of God, here he was experiencing God's undertaking. And then in the context of chapter 19, when Saul sent messengers to David's house to put him to death, and how Michal, his wife, helped him to escape and he had to flee, can be viewed also from this angle that even his enemy's daughter was helping him to escape. Even his enemy's daughter was helping him. And not only that, we find that Michal, the enemy's daughter, King Saul's daughter, was the very one that Saul had intended for David as a snare to him. Chapter 18, verses 20 and 21. Now Michal, Saul's daughter, loved David. When they told Saul the thing was agreeable to him, and Saul thought, I will give her to him that she may become a snare to him, that the hand of the Philistines may be against him. This was actually part of King Saul's plot for the destruction of David. But here, Michal, his wife, was helping him, the enemy's daughter helping him to escape. And then, still in chapter 19, from verse 18 onwards, when David fled to Samuel, and how King Saul sent three batches of messengers to arrest David and finally went himself. The first way of looking at it, you feel so terrible that King Saul keep on trying to kill him, trying to catch him, arrest him. And one escape after another was not enough. He still persisted. But another way of looking at it is, in this context, God's clear intervention. This is another instance where, in various of this context, in many ways, God will be undertaking for David, because the pronouncement was already there, the Lord was with him. But sometimes it's stated in clearer terms, sometimes the record just shows how David escaped. But in this context, we find that God intervened, and the records are a bit clearer here. There are other contexts where it's even clearer. And here, one way of viewing in this context how David was severely tried, as one batch after another of Saul's messengers tried to arrest him. But the other way of looking at it is actually opportunities for King David to experience firsthand God's undertaking, God's intervention, and how God intervened, and the messengers of Saul were not able to accomplish the mission. And again, God intervened, and finally, even when King Saul went himself, he also prophesied and was not able to accomplish the evil intent in his heart. God's undertaking for David. And then in chapter 20, verse 1, we see how David fled to Jonathan. And rather than just viewing that King David had to flee all over, we see here in this context that in the lives of believers, there are also various contexts and aspects of encouragement to our lives. Here, David fleeing to Jonathan, and to see here that Jonathan is actually his enemy's son. But Jonathan was on his side, and Jonathan appreciated him and helped him. I'll not read through the details here, you can read through for yourself. And Jonathan was not only on his side, his friend, but a very special friend. Verse 17, Jonathan made David vow again because of his love for him, because he loved him as he loved his own life. The kind of love that Jonathan had for David, very deep love for him, very deep concern for David, and he sought very earnestly to help David. Something that David can appreciate and should appreciate. In the context of his difficulties, there are also various aspects of encouragement. His enemy's son appreciated him and helped him, even to the degree that he incurred his father's wrath. And King Saul actually tried to spear his own son. You can read this from verse 30 onwards. I'll not read through now. In verse 33, how Saul hurled his spear at Jonathan to strike him down because of how Jonathan has spoke up on David's behalf. And then we saw just now how David fled to Nob and then to Gath, and how he delivered Keilah and so on. And I just make this remark that regards to his deliverance of Keilah, and how David was told that they will surrender him to Saul. I mentioned just now that in such context, it may be viewed as something rather discouraging that those you deliver will surrender you to your enemy. And yet, during such times, it can be viewed in another way. And that is, during such times, as they have been through this experience, he can actually be rather thankful. As he sought the Lord let him know in advance that this will take place so that he can escape. Chapter 23, verse 12. When David inquired of the Lord, "Will the men of Keilah surrender me and my men into the hand of Saul?" And the Lord said, "They will surrender you." One way to respond is to be very discouraged. Even the man I've delivered will surrender me to my enemy. But during such times, one way to look at it, the proper response is, here you are seeking the Lord, and the Lord helped him to understand the situation. The Lord let him know in advance so that he can escape and he will not be caught by King Saul. And so it's an occasion for him to be thankful for the Lord's goodness, undertaking and grace towards him. And then in verse 14, as he fled and stayed in the wilderness, as Saul sought after him day after day, every day seeking after him, it seemed rather difficult, dangerous, unpleasant. But notice, in verse 14, as it mentions how King Saul sought him every day, notice these words. Very clear terms, in very clear terms. But God did not deliver him into his hand. So this is a very clear scriptural record. God did not deliver David into the hand of Saul. God was undertaking the sovereignty of God. David was secure in God. And surely there is no greater form of security and comfort to know that God in His sovereignty is undertaking, watching over your life in this way. God did not allow Saul to catch hold of David. And again, encouragement, verse 16. Verse 16 and 17. Jonathan, Saul's son, arose and went to David at Horesh and encouraged him in God. He was in a difficult time, verse 16 of chapter 23. But Jonathan, his good friend, his enemy's son, he went to him and encouraged him. And not only that, verse 17 elaborated. Then he said to him, Jonathan said to David, "Do not be afraid, because the hand of Saul my father shall not find you, and you will be king over Israel, and I will be next to you, and Saul my father knows that also." Surely these are words of encouragement to a person in David's situation. So there are various forms of encouragement and comfort. As we go through life's context, there may be various difficulties, but the Lord in His goodness provides us with various aspects of encouragement and comfort. Jonathan willing to go all the way there in David's difficult circumstances to encourage him, to strengthen him, in spite of the fact that he was nearly killed by his own father, King Saul, earlier on when he spoke up for David. And then as we go on, from verse 25 onwards, we saw just now how Saul continued to pursue David in the wilderness and was surrounding him, and was so precarious. Verse 26, how Saul was on one side of the mountain and David and his men were on the other side of the mountain, and David was hurrying to get away from Saul, for Saul and his men were surrounding David. Precarious, unpleasant experience. But does this context again? There are a very clear manifestation of the sovereignty of God. Verses 27 and 28. At that point of time when David was almost seized, but a messenger came to Saul saying, "Hurry and come down. Hurry and come, for the Philistines have made a raid on the land." So Saul returned from pursuing David and went to meet the Philistines. Therefore they called that place the Rock of Escape. It was such a remarkable event that they actually named that place the Rock of Escape. It was a very outstanding event Well, we look at this. We can say also that it's a rather interesting and exciting life actually that David was going through. Now some of you may wonder why I make this remark. But actually, if you ponder about it, you'll see that actually a faithful walk with God often involves various difficulties, but also various aspects which are very meaningful. At times, in fact not just at times, but it's quite clear if we learn how to appreciate it. The Christian life is not only meaningful, but in many ways very interesting in a healthy sense. And sometimes even exciting. It's very meaningful, it's very interesting in a healthy sense, and at times even exciting. But we have to distinguish that from the fleshly form. And none as believers, we have to be careful not to seek for fleshly excitement. Sometimes believers, in their foolishness, in their own fleshly ways, they try to seek for excitement, do many things to experience some excitement, climb some dangerous mountains, take part in all kinds of dangerous activities to get some excitement. Not because they believe the Lord wants them to be there, but to have some excitement. Now these are things that we have to be very careful about, because we will not be able to, and we should not presumptuously expect God to undertake for us during such times, and we may end up in serious trouble. But if we are faithfully walking with God, you'll find that there are various aspects in our lives where it's not only meaningful but interesting, and also at times rather exciting. But you'll notice that here an aspect I'm trying to point out is that a faithful walk with God is not what at times people may think, a very dull kind of life, or some may just think just full of difficulties, pain, and very dull. Actually, it is not. It's meaningful, interesting in the true sense of it, and also at times exciting. But not because we seek for excitement. Exciting as we have opportunities to see how God undertakes, how God works in very definite ways, even in times of danger. But of course, we must be careful not to be preoccupied with emotional excitement, but to realize that as we go through various contexts of life, as we learn to trust God, there are many opportunities for us to see God undertaking for us, sometimes in ways that we may not perceive them if we are not perceptive, if we are not prayerful, we may not even notice God's undertaking in many different ways. But at times, in very definite ways, they are very obvious, we can see the hand of the Lord. And then as we go on to chapter 24, we see how Saul continued to pursue David in the wilderness of Engedi. And in verse 3, we saw just now how David and his men were nearly caught because they were in the recesses of the cave. And Saul went into the cave. But though this was a context where they were nearly caught because they were in the recesses of the cave, but as it turned out, it was a triumphant situation for David, and also an opportunity for effective testimony. So sometimes it is like that, which we will consider a little more afterwards. Such contexts where at times may appear rather difficult, dangerous, can actually be rather meaningful contexts for positive outcome of things. Here, opportunity for effective testimony by David, and also the effect upon Saul. Saul was touched, and he actually acknowledged the truth of the situation and confessed. You can look at the confession of King Saul in this context. We see from verse 4 onwards, testimony of David and the confession of Saul. We see when King Saul went into the cave, the men of David said to him, This is the day which the Lord said to you, Behold, I am about to give your enemy into your hand, and you shall do to him as it seems good to you. But you see, David arose and cut off the edge of Saul's robe secretly. And verse 6, he said to his men, Far be it from me because of the Lord that I should do this thing to my Lord, the Lord's anointed, to stretch out my hand against him, since he is the Lord's anointed. David was quite clear that he should not kill King Saul, and not only that, after even cutting off the edge of Saul's robe was something whereby his conscience bothered him. Verse 5 says that. And then verse 7, how Saul arose, left the cave, but David arose and called after Saul in verse 8. And you see here his testimony to King Saul. My Lord the King. Saul looked behind him. David bowed his face to the ground, prostrated himself, and David said to Saul, Why do you listen to the words of men, saying, Behold, David seeks to harm you. Behold, this day your eyes have seen that the Lord had given you into my hand in the cave, and some said to kill you, but my eye had pity on you, and I said, I will not stretch out my hand against my Lord, for he is the Lord's anointed. David's testimony to Saul. The Lord had given you into my hand in the cave. I could have killed you. And some actually said that I should kill you. But I have pity on you, and I will not stretch out my hand against you, because you are the Lord's anointed. Now my father, see, indeed, the edge of your robe in my hand is proof I could have killed you. For in that I cut off the edge of your robe and did not kill you, know and perceive that there is no evil or rebellion in my hands, and I have not sinned against you, though you are lying in wait for my life to take it. May the Lord judge between you and me, and may the Lord avenge me on you, but my hand shall not be against you. As the proverb of the ancient says, out of the wicked comes forth wickedness, but my hand shall not be against you. After whom has the king of Israel come out? Whom are you pursuing? A dead dog, a single flea? The Lord therefore be judge and decide between you and me, and may he see and plead my cause and deliver me from your hand. David's appeal was to the Lord, who sees all things, who will judge impartially, and that the Lord will undertake in the matter, but he will not strike King Saul. Now it came about when David had finished speaking these words to Saul, that Saul said, Is this your voice, my son David? Saul was touched. Then Saul lifted up his voice and wept. And he said to David, You are more righteous than I. He was touched. He acknowledged that David was more righteous than he. He confessed, For you have dealt well with me, while I have dealt wickedly with you. He recognized this. And you have declared today that you have done good to me, that the Lord delivered me into your hand, and yet you did not kill me. For if a man finds his enemy, will he let him go away safely? May the Lord therefore reward you with good in return for what you have done to me this day. The words from the mouth of an enemy who had relentlessly pursued him. This is a touching scene. And now behold, I know that you shall surely be king, and that the kingdom of Israel shall be established in your hand. These words that Saul said are true. So now swear to me by the Lord that you will not cut off my descendants after you, and that you will not destroy my name from my father's household. David swore to Saul. It turned out to be an opportunity for effective testimony on the part of David, because of the way he conducted himself. And also, it hit King Saul, it touched him, it hit him quite hard. He actually wept, and he confessed, acknowledged that David was righteous, he was the one who acted wickedly, and how he recognized that David will be king, and David's kingdom will be established. And yet, later on, we find that King Saul again went after David. Was it because all this was just a farce? It was just a pretense? From what we can see in the records, this is not likely. It's likely that King Saul meant it when he went and he said these words of truth. But though Saul recognized this to be the truth, the response in his heart was not deep. His personal desires were still too strong, were still very strong. And later on, although here he recognized it, that he shouldn't treat David in this way, at this point of time, he recognized his own wrongdoing, but later on, again, he continued pursuing after David. And this experience that David went through, we can see also many such parallels in the lives of those who are faithful to God. There are many situations that may be difficult, and even situations where it looks as if we are getting the hot soup. But these can turn out to be opportunities, precious opportunities for effective testimony and also various positive and meaningful outcomes can come out of such times if we are faithful to God. Situations that may appear rather undesirable for us to be in, if we are faithful to the Lord, is part of the Lord's intention for our lives. As we are faithful to Him, He allows us to get into various difficult situations. There can be various positive, meaningful outcomes, not only for our own lives, but also can positively affect the lives of others. Testimony to them, as well as various other meaningful things that can take place. And then, in chapter 26, as I mentioned just now, how Saul, after that, he still went after David, even after that experience, how David spared him, after his acknowledgement, confession. Verses 1 and 2, how he continued to pursue David in the wilderness of Ziph. But it was in this context that again there was a very clear record of God's intervention. This was a context where Saul was pursuing after David, and David sent out spies, verse 4, and he knew what Saul was doing. And after that, we find how verse 5 tells us Saul was lying in the circle of the camp, and the people were camped around him. And in that context, David spoke to Ahimelech, verse 6, and Abishai as to who will go down with him to Saul in the camp, and Abishai said, I will go with you. And both of them, just two of them, went to the camp where Saul and his men were. And David and Abishai came to the people by night, and behold, Saul lay sleeping inside the circle of the camp. In this context again, verse 8, but Abishai said to David how this was his golden opportunity. David did not even raise his hand. He says that, now therefore please let me strike him with a spear to the ground with one stroke, just one stroke, and I will not strike him the second time. Just let me give him one stroke, I'll kill him. But David refused to allow Abishai to do that. Do not destroy him, for who can stretch out his hand against the Lord's anointed and be without guilt? David also said, as the Lord lives, surely the Lord will strike him, or his day will come that he dies, or he will go down into battle and perish. He will let God do whatever he wants with King Saul's life, but he will not strike King Saul or even allow Abishai to do it. Verse 11, the Lord forbid that I should stretch out my hand against the Lord's anointed, but now please take spear that is at his head and a jug of water. So that's what they did. And there is this comment here in verse 12, a very clear record of God's undertaking in the situation. Verse 12, so David took the spear and the jug of water from beside Saul's head, and they went away, but no one saw or knew it, nor did any awake, for they were all asleep because a sound sleep from the Lord had fallen on them. In the context of Saul and his men pursuing after David, there was this opportunity for David to go through this experience in the context of what they did. It's recorded here that a sound sleep from the Lord had fallen on them, a clear indication of God's undertaking. And throughout the various aspects of what David has been going through, it's quite clear the Lord's undertaking. And here and there, there are very clear remarks in this direction, including in this context. Sound sleep from the Lord had fallen on them. This gives rise to another opportunity for David's testimony, and again, confession of Saul, confession of sin. He said in clear terms, confess in clear terms that he has sinned. So as we read on from verse 13 onwards, I'll not read through the whole passage, but just quickly the incident that took place, how David called to the people. Abner was the command, was also involved in the situation. And as David called to Saul and his men, they awoke, and verse 17 says, Saul recognized David's voice. Is this your voice, my son David? And David said, it is my voice, my lord the king. And then he went on to say, why is it that he's pursuing him? What have I done? What evil is in my hand? Now therefore, please let my lord the king listen to the words of his servant. If the Lord has stirred you up against me, let him accept an offering. But if it is men, cursed are they before the Lord, for they have driven me out today, that I should have no attachment with the inheritance of the Lord, saying, go serve other gods. Now then, do not let my blood fall to the ground, away from the presence of the Lord. For the king of Israel has come out to search for a single flea, just as one hunts a partridge in the mountains. Then Saul said, I have sinned. Now this was so because David had already earlier mentioned how he had taken away the king's spear, verse 16. He mentioned this, how, see where the king's spear is and the jug of water that was at his head. Saul realized that David had again spared him, and he says, return, my son David, I have sinned. I will not harm you again, because my life was precious in your sight this day. Behold, I have played the fool and have committed a serious error. And David answered and said, behold, the spear of the king. Now let one of the young men come over and take it. And the Lord will repay each man for his righteousness and for his faithfulness. For the Lord delivered you into my hand today, but I refused to stretch out my hand against the Lord's anointed. Now behold, as your life was highly valued in my sight this day, so may my life be highly valued in the sight of the Lord, and may he deliver me from all distress. His ultimate confidence is in the Lord, to protect him, to deliver him, and not on man. Then Saul said to David, blessed are you, my son David. You will both accomplish much and surely prevail. So David went on his way, and Saul returned to his place, and he gave up. And he did not continue to seek after David on this occasion. So this incident is rather similar to the earlier one. The way David was able to testify, and the way Saul responded and confessed and acknowledged his own wrongdoing. And then, but chapter 27, we've seen just now how David finally decided to go into the land of the Philistines so that Saul will give up searching for him. We have now tried to look at what David went through from a different perspective from the earlier occasion. And we look, ponder about it, it's helpful for us to take note that if we view experiences and the situations of life in this second way, I mentioned just now there are two ways of viewing such situations. But if we view experiences and situations of life in this second way, which is what we should, and also that is the way that is in line with the true perspective and the reality, rather than the first way, which is according to our appearance of things, this is how we view situations of life, it would make a lot of difference with regards to our ability to go through the situations well. This is an important point for us to take note of. If we learn to view our situations of life and experiences we go through in this second way, and I want to emphasize that this is in line with the true perspective. If it is not in line with the true perspective, we should not. But it is in line with the true perspective, it's in line with reality. And we view it in this perspective to see how God undertook for David and the many opportunities for him to see God undertaking. Opportunities for him also to be a good testimony for the Lord. To see how God works and to learn to trust God, to pray and to see how God answers prayer. There are many occasions in this context for David to learn to pray in the situations that he goes through and to see how God undertakes. If we approach life in this second way, it would make a lot of difference. Why? What's the difference? If we approach life the first way, that is according to the outward appearance of things, and as you saw just now, to view it as a very terrible, miserable kind of context or miserable life, having so many problems and so on, if we view it in that kind of way, we'll find that it leads us in the direction of a very low morale. We'll feel very difficult, oppressed, and it can also move in the direction of depression, of despair, and we lose our will to fight a good fight. And this is very serious. So just the way we view it already is very significant. We view it the first way, it leads to low morale, and we lose the will to fight a good fight. But if we view it the second way, which is in line with the reality, how God looks at it, and how God desires us to go through it, we find that it leads to a right positive posture being adopted. And this is what I want to emphasize. The right positive posture adopted. And I say that if we do that, half the battle is already won. Just the right positive posture adopted is a very significant thing. The right positive posture once adopted has various implications, important implications as to how we go through such situations and our ability to go through them properly. When the positive posture is adopted, it helps us and it moves in the direction of effective cooperation with God. If we don't adopt a proper posture, it becomes difficult to cooperate well with God, not effective, because we're discouraged, we can't look at things properly. And the way we pray, the way we look at the whole situation, we are not able to cooperate effectively with God. But a positive posture helps us to cooperate effectively with God. And also, a positive posture gives to God the freedom to work effectively in our lives and also in the situation. God wants to work in our lives, but how God works in our lives is related to our posture and the way we respond to Him, the way we respond to the situation. So when we adopt a positive posture, there's freedom for God to work effectively in our lives. What He wants to speak to us, how He wants us to view the situation, what He wants to learn, how He wants us to exercise ourselves. The freedom of God to speak to us will help us to work effectively in our lives, and the areas of our lives that He wants to point out, to show us whether the areas of lack, areas to develop, and so on. Freedom for God to work effectively in our lives, to train us, to transform us, and also the freedom for God to work meaningfully, effectively in the situation. God is a good God. There are many things that He wants to do, but our posture, our attitude, our ways will affect significantly how God works, not only in our lives, but also in that situation. So for example, we saw the testimony of David and the effect can have upon others who are watching. But if David is not responding properly, then it becomes difficult for there to be those positive impact. So there are various things that God wants to do, but how God works in the situation is related to our posture, our attitudes and ways. But not only in relation to God, the other is regards to the powers of darkness. When we adopt a positive posture, the right posture, we will also hinder the powers of darkness from taking advantage of the situation, from working in the situation, and also the way the powers of darkness take advantage of our lives and the way the powers of darkness work in our lives. When we adopt a positive posture, we will find that it hinders the powers of darkness from working in our lives, whether it be our feelings, our spirit, or our mind. See, a negative posture or an improper posture adopted, the power of darkness can easily manipulate our feelings, and we will just go along with it because we also want to nurse those feelings, for example, of self-pity and so on. And the power of darkness will encourage despair and so on. Likewise, our spirit make us to lose heart, no will, to lose heart, to exercise our will to fight a good fight. But we adopt a positive posture. Once we adopt it, it becomes difficult for the powers of darkness to take advantage. Likewise, our mind, the thoughts that come to our minds, various negative thoughts, improper thoughts, harmful thoughts. When a negative posture or an improper posture is adopted, it becomes easy for the evil one to plant all kinds of unhealthy negative thoughts. Where our posture is right, it hinders him from working in the situation. So this is an important aspect that we should take note of. The posture that we adopt, the view that we take of situations, it matters a lot how we go through a situation. The same person in the same set of circumstances, when we shift from one posture to the other, if we succeed, we are able, we are helped, and we cooperate from the first posture to the second, just the shifting of the posture in itself will make a significant difference how we go through that situation. I now want to conclude with a concluding remark, and that is to highlight and take note of the scriptural pronouncement on this period of David's life. It's helpful for us to take note of the scriptural pronouncement on this period of David's life, which is actually rather contrary to the outward appearance of things. 1 Samuel chapter 18, verse 14. A verse that we did mention, look at just now. We want to concentrate on this verse now. 1 Samuel 18, verse 14. And David was prospering in all his ways, for the Lord was with him. This is the scriptural pronouncement on this period of David's life. David was prospering in all his ways. You'll find that this is in 1 Samuel chapter 18. And this statement is followed by his various flights from the pursuing Saul and much hardship that he had to endure. This was in the context of Saul angry, suspicious of David, and the context where he was followed by Saul trying very hard to kill him, and David having to flee and going through many difficulties. But the statement here was that David was prospering in all his ways, and the reason given is, for the Lord was with him. This was the reason, for the Lord was with him, in a favorable sense. In times past, we've considered the meaning of the Lord being with us. It can be in a favorable sense, but in another sense, we know that the Lord is omnipresent. But in this context, it's quite clear that the Lord was with David in a favorable sense, just like Joseph in Genesis chapter 39 verse 2. We've also considered that in detail in times past, this same series of messages. The Lord was with Joseph and the difficulties that Joseph went through, but the Lord was with him, and he was a successful man, a prosperous man, although he was going through much hardship as a slave and even in prison. And it's helpful for us to take note that this is the most important issue in life. This is the most important issue in life. All else is secondary. This pronouncement, David was prospering in all his ways, for the Lord was with him. If the Lord is with us in a favorable sense, this is the most important. All else is secondary. What we go through, the nature of events that we go through, and so on, all that is secondary. What is most important is the Lord with us in a favorable sense. And this is what we must concentrate upon. This is what we must ensure above all else. And it's helpful for us to take note that we can do something about it. It's not just the Lord is with you in a favorable sense. He may be with you, he may not be with you, and that's it. Or it's up to the Lord whether he wants to be with you in a favorable sense. It is not like that. God is a perfect God. He's not an arbitrary God. He's a God of truth, a God of principles. He doesn't just arbitrarily be with a person in a favorable sense and refuse to be with another in a favorable sense in an arbitrary way. We can ensure that the Lord will be with us in a favorable sense. And this is what we must seek to ensure. We can do something about it and not just hope or even just pray that the Lord will be with us in a favorable sense. We can ensure that the Lord be with us in a favorable sense. How? By ensuring that the Lord is pleased with our lives. How? By being faithful and obedient to Him. These are not difficult things to understand. If the Lord is pleased with us, He will be with us in a favorable sense. If we are faithful and obedient to Him, He will be pleased with us. And so this is what we must ensure. Be faithful, obedient to God, and thereby ensuring He's pleased with our lives, that He will be with us in a favorable sense, and all else is secondary. All will be well for our lives if the Lord is with us in a favorable sense, if He is pleased with us. If this is true, if the Lord is with us in a favorable sense, then we can have true confidence in Him and a deep sense of assurance of God's undertaking. And this is definitely very precious to all of us. If God is with us in a favorable sense, if this is true, we can have true confidence in Him and a deep sense of assurance of God's undertaking and true security and well-being from the eternal perspective. Whatever may come upon us and whatever we may have to go through, but it is important not to have a false sense of confidence in God, a false sense of assurance that God is undertaking, a false sense of security and well-being. This often happens. And sometimes believers wrongly think that if they somehow just manage to exercise themselves to believe, thinking it is faith to believe that God is undertaking, that there's deep sense of assurance of security in God, of confidence in God, that is what they must work at, to make themselves believe that God is undertaking. But that is not the way to go about it. We do not seek to make sure that our lives are pleasing before God. We cannot properly have true confidence in Him. Even if we somehow manage to make ourselves believe in it, that is not true faith. And we will not be able to have true security in God, not true, nor justified in having a deep sense of assurance of His undertaking and the confidence to face all situations of life. But if we make sure that our lives are right before Him, pleasing before Him, then we can be ready by His grace, trusting Him to face whatever may come upon us, whatever we may go through, and know that in it, through all the situations of life, there will be true security in God and also true well-being. In other words, the importance of maintaining a clear conscience. is a very crucial issue for our lives. If we maintain a clear conscience before God, we can have true confidence in Him. But if we cannot, if we do not maintain a clear conscience before God, we cannot have true confidence in Him. Of course, here I'm talking about clear confidence in a healthy, clear conscience in a healthy sense. Sometimes we are disturbed when we ought not to, and we need to clear it up. I'm talking about making a clear conscience. And a clear conscience, I mention this because it doesn't mean that you have to live a perfect life, or you must wait until you're very mature in God. No. At any stage in our lives, we can commit our lives to God. We can seek to maintain a clear conscience before Him. Even if you're a young believer, we can properly have a deep sense of assurance of God's undertaking and true peace and security in Him, and a deep sense of well-being in a proper sense by maintaining a clear conscience before God, trusting Him, seeking, and always we know how to be true to Him, open to Him, obedient to Him. So briefly, in summary of what we've considered today, we have concentrated on the scriptural record of what David went through during the period of his life when he was pursuing, rather when he was fleeing from King Saul, who wanted to kill him. And generally, when we view a situation, a context like this, as well as in various contexts in our own lives, a tendency to view David's position as rather unfavorable, having to face the king of Israel with his army, and David having to flee from place to place, seems so insecure, dangerous, and so much hardship he had to go through. Looked like a rather miserable life. And as we trace through so many incidents, so many occasions where King Saul not only pursued him, but on various occasions almost caught him, at times nearly killed him, for example, as he threw the spear at him. But we also see how not only is it possible to view what David went through during this period of his life from another perspective, but to realize that there's another perspective, another way of viewing what he went through, which is the true perspective. And that is to be able to recognize how God looks at a situation, the true state of King Saul, and how King Saul was the one who was in a bad state, in a miserable condition, terrorized by evil spirits, spiritual bondage, rather insecure, threatened, fearful of David. But on David's part, God was sovereignly undertaking for him. The Lord's blessings and favor was upon him, and he had true security and blessedness in the Lord.